EY for this post-budget knowledge-sharing session. To have with us Mr. Farooq Subedar from the Tata Group. You all know him very well. I am also joined in by my colleagues Harishankar Subramanian and Pranav Saita. I would like to make a few points, few introductory points which came to my mind. One is, as all of us know and many of us acknowledge, that the quality of the economic survey which we read was perhaps one of the best we have come across in recent times. And why do we say that? In terms of its clarity, in terms of its prescriptiveness, particularly on the subject which is of interest to us and which is on tax policy, and in terms of its to actually go into areas which were earlier considered holy cow, and by that I mean, you know, the taxation and addressing subsidies on, as the survey says, on the well-off, or as Mr. Arvind Subramanian says, on the non-poor, which is different from just the super rich. And we'll talk about that in due course. So that, to my mind, was the first highlight of this year's economic survey. I think the second overhang or highlight, if you like, is very clearly there is a certain non-Anglo-Saxon economist who has taken tax policy by storm, if you like. And of course, that's Mr. Thomas Piketty. We have all read his dissertations on taxation on capital and the fact that when he was in India, we had a lot of discussions along with policymakers in North Block. Now, as we will see, there are many proposals in this budget which one would argue do have the Piketty effect and perhaps for the right reason. I think the third aspect of this year's budget, as I look at it, is that in a way, and this is a welcome change, there are very, very few surprises. The fact that we had a corporate tax roadmap already announced well in advance by the finance minister himself, of course, last year, but also followed through with, as we know, a particular, you know, way forward on incentives and subsidies and the corporate tax rate. We did not get any surprise. It was within those boundaries or parameters. And then when we look at the Tax Simplification Committee chaired by Justice Ishwar with a very clear mandate, please come out with your first tranche of quick wins by 31st January. And the Revenue Secretary made it clear so that we can implement some of those proposals in the budget. And what do you find is many of those suggestions, very, very laudatory suggestions, find a place in the budget. Some of them have been tweaked for, you know, policy considerations, I'm sure. But the ethos of the Ishwar Committee proposals do find a place in the budget. So here we have the economic survey, we have the, you know, the fair share of tax to be considered, and we have simplification from the, you know, proposals from the Ishwar Committee. Then there are, I would say, two other, you know, overhangs, if you like. One is, of course, you know, the move towards indirect tax simplification, given the fact that GST is still, well, some time away, to put it mildly, which we will have a more detailed. I saw some attempt, and I don't know how exhaustive that attempt is, to try and harmonize customs and excise and make in India more attractive. Now, we know the economic survey had some very strong suggestions to suggest that it is the current indirect tax system, particularly on countervailing duties, according to the survey, is working to the detriment of making. Discuss how successfully this budget has tried to address those areas which find a mention in the economic survey. Then when I look at global developments, as we all know, we have the overhang of the base erosion and profit shift action points from the OECD. And on this part, again, no surprises at all, to the extent that the minimum standard, which is on country-by-country reporting, we were clearly told upfront by the lawmakers, by the policymakers, that we will, India will implement those and come into the budget. What has the one surprise in that respect is the so-called Google tax, but to borrow the phraseology from the OECD, which the FM has done, is this levy, special levy of 6% on e-commerce transactions. Now that's, in a way, people expected that the digital commerce area of taxation would be addressed in due course by India and not so quickly. So in that sense, this has come as a surprise, you could argue. Coming back to the tax reforms agenda, the one other slightly surprising element perhaps is the fact that on the corporate tax reduction, the corporate tax rate reduction to 25%, The good thing is it extends to manufacturing, but you could equally ask the question that why is it only for new manufacturing units and why not for all other economic activity when you really want to move towards a moderate rate of taxation. And then finally, you have the proposals on the so-called super rich or the affluent or whichever, the well-off, whichever way you want to describe. In one respect, the finance minister has donned his hat to his predecessor, which is in terms of actually increasing the surcharge from 12% to 15% on income earners above rupees 1 crore. So that is a continuity in the thinking on the super rich having to pay more tax. And then you have the, you know, this was a very oft debated point rather, the dividend distribution tax. There was a lot of talk whether, you know, you will find DDT going away completely and moving towards a tax on shareholders. So what we find is DDT is continuing, but there is a higher, there is a special levy rather of 10% on dividend income earners above rupees 10 lakh. Now this 10 lakh figure, I think, is a definition of well-off as far as this government is concerned. If I look at the same threshold being applied for the removal of LPG subsidies earlier, in that sense, there is again no surprise that the amount of 10 lakh has been taken as a proxy for what the economic survey had suggested in terms of the well-off bearing a larger share of taxes. So I think if I look at international developments, both on tax policy and economic thinking in terms of fairness, the finance minister has picked that up. And the prime minister made no secret of the fact in his radio program yesterday that he is, many of these ideas are bear his imprint in terms of massive increase in emphasis on agriculture, on infrastructure and on smaller businesses in a relative sense. Very clearly coming out. A lot of expenditures devoted to those sectors. How is it? How is the balance sheet tying up for the government next year? There is always a cause for worry, and that we will see. Particularly when you look at the assumptions for increase in non-tax revenues, there seem to be a 25% spike in non-tax revenues. I'm sure it's again the disinvestment plan of the government which finds a place in those assumptions, but we have seen those targets not being achieved. I think the indirect tax increase seems to be reasonably realistic at 12%, given that it was 10% shorn of the petroleum or energy goods increases this year. Direct tax, as we know, we fell short this year. I'm not sure whether we will achieve the uptick in the targets next year. So there are those little bit of, you know, doubts around some of those assumptions, as we always see every year. So these are some broad level thoughts which I thought would form a useful backdrop to what we want to discuss in more detail. And with these thoughts, I will now invite my colleague Pranav to take us through some key direct tax proposals. And as I said, they will be followed by Hari on indirect tax proposals. Pranav.
Thank you so much, Sudhir. Quickly moving on to the direct tax proposals, taking off from where Sudhir left us. There are no significant changes in the proposed tax rates for individuals except the super rich tax, where the surcharge has been raised from 12% to 15% in case of persons having income exceeding rupees 1 crore. We know that the cess remains the same, no change in the cess. The rebates for low income group individuals, persons, has now been enhanced from 2,000 to 5,000 rupees. This applies to persons having income below rupees 5 lakhs per year, where the rebate has been increased to rupees 5,000. Corporate tax rates, again, as such, not a change, but we are told that corporate taxes for domestic companies, if they are set up and registered on or after March 16 and engaged in a business of manufacturing or production, and which do not claim any incentives, deductions, exemptions, can now be only 25%. So already we are moving towards a paradigm shift, a change in the corporate tax regime and a phasing out of incentives and exemptions if the manufacturing entity or the production company does so by way of not claiming any exemptions. We are also told that for companies having incomes not exceeding rupees 5 crore annually, even now the tax rate will drop to 29% from the current 30%. So we already have a moving towards, slowly but surely, towards a phasing out of exemptions
and a reduction in the corporate tax rates starting off now. We have ATJJA. We are now told that the deduction of 30% of the additional wages being paid to new regular workmen in a factory, which is being already presently allowed in the case of manufacturing companies manufacturing goods, will now extend to all sectors. Any taxpayer who is subject to tax audit will now be entitled to this benefit, because it's not a condition that presently exists. Two relaxations. One, the number of days of employment will now be, the threshold limit will be 240 days of the year, not the earlier 300 days. The requirement of International Financial Services Center will now qualify for various tax benefits. One, the ATLA benefits, which is currently already existing without a sunset clause as of now, will continue. No change. Also, we are told that companies in IFSC will not be liable to dividend distribution tax, and also the minimum alternate tax will be half, will be just 9% instead of the regular 18.5% plus surcharge and cess. So specific incentives for the IFSC. We are told again that no securities transaction tax and commodity transaction tax, STT, CTT, both will be absent in regard to all foreign currency transactions undertaken on a recognized exchange in the IFSC. We are further told that the long-term capital gain exemption under 1038, which typically is available in regard to transactions undertaken, will also continue. Despite the fact that there is no STT payable, the long-term capital gain exemption will be available in regard to transactions on stock exchanges in the IFSC. Moving on further, the BEPS debate that has come as a real surprise in this budget is in regard to digital economy taxation. We are told that a new equalization levy is proposed to be introduced. And levy will be payable at the rate of 6% of the gross consideration which a resident pays to a non-resident in regard to certain specified services. So that's something that comes as a surprise. 6% of the gross payment to be deducted at source by the Indian resident while making payment to the non-resident in regard to the digital economy transactions, as we widely refer to them. The only safe harbor seems to be where the aggregate consideration for the specified service is less than 100,000 Indian rupees, then this levy will not apply, which is really small transactions. So for all told, what we are now faced with is already an TBCR. As was expected, the finance bill does introduce the essential elements relating to the country by country reporting in line with Action Plan 13 of the BEPS OECD report. We are told, however, the significant penalties if these reports are not filed. So we need to maintain master file, local file, the CBCR report needs to be submitted for any breach here. The threshold as expected is Euro 750 million, and therefore an Indian parent, it will apply if the consolidated revenues for the international group during the year ended March 16 exceeds approximately 5.4 billion Indian rupees. Concessional regime for patent taxation will be introduced, and registered, both developed and registered in India, will be now subject to any income taxation at a flat rate of 10% if a resident in India earns income by way of exploitation of that patent. 10% of the gross amount of royalty earned, whether domestically or from a foreign entity, will be the tax rate on royalty income in regard to such patent earnings. On purchase of the right to use spectrum, will be amortizable and allowable over the period for which the right to use spectrum remains in force. Moving on further, in regard to startups, as promised and as was expected, 100% tax exemption is available in regard to startups' profits from taxability for 3 out of 5 years, so long as the startup commences before 1st April 2019. Minimum alternate tax, however, will apply. Moving on, in regard to the proposals where Indian companies having subsidiaries abroad were worried about the place of effective management of the foreign company being regarded as to be in India and thereby the foreign company liable to Indian taxation on global incomes, we are told that the POEM will stand deferred by a year. So we will see the applicability for the financial year beginning on April 1, 2016. The POEM test will now not apply for the year ended March 16, but will apply only for the year beginning April 1, 16. It was only fair to do so, especially given that the draft guidelines came out only end of December and are yet to be finalized. An extremely commendable provision, again coming out of the Ishwar Committee report, is that a foreign company will not necessarily require a PAN, and in absence of PAN, the permanent account number, the withholding tax will not necessarily be 20% if certain prescribed conditions are fulfilled. Hopefully, the conditions prescribed will be fair and reasonable, so long as there's a proper tax identification number and a TRC, one would assume that absence of permanent account number would not result in enhanced withholding taxes. Moving on further, in regard to fund manager activities, some of the conditions that were regarded as not very practical have been relaxed. So we are told, one, that the central government will now have the ability to notify certain countries, and even if the fund is registered or set up in such a jurisdiction which does not have a double tax treaty with India, but is a notified jurisdiction as notified by the central government, the benefit of this provision, Section 9A, will continue to be available. Also, in regard to the activities of the fund managers, moving on again, once again, in regard to AIFs, alternative investment funds, category 1 and category 2 funds, as we all know, currently the provision states that when the fund pays an investor, the fund will be required to do another laudable provision is in regard to provision made for bad and doubtful debts. Currently, such provisions are eligible for a tax break deduction, expense deduction in the hands of banks. We are told that even NBFCs will now be eligible for deduction to the extent of up to a maximum of 5% of their income in regard to provision made for bad and doubtful debts. Moving on further, in regard to REITs, there has been a long-standing demand that dividend distributed by the SPV to the business trust should not be subject to dividend distribution tax. This has finally found favor, and for dividends distributed on or after June 1, 2016, this dividend distribution tax will not apply so long as the dividend distribution has been made out of current income. Of course, assuming that the business trust, in regard on foreign companies, as assured after the circular which was brought out post the AP Shah, Justice AP Shah report, we are now told a formal amendment has been proposed in the law. If the foreign company does not have a permanent establishment in India and it comes from a country with which India has DTAA, then the provisions of minimum alternate tax will not apply. Similarly, for a company, foreign company coming from a jurisdiction with which India does not have a treaty, if it is not required to register itself under the Companies Act, then again, the minimum alternate tax provision will not apply. This is including asset reconstruction companies are concerned. We are told that from June 1, 2016, the DDT on distributions by the securitization trust will be abolished, and instead, there will be a pass-through taxation, meaning thereby that the investors, so to say, will be liable to tax in the like manner and to the same extent as the income received by the trust itself. So the trust itself will be a pass-through. The investor, based on the type of income, will be liable to tax in the manner in which the individual investors would be liable to tax. Once again, a further rationalization of the provision where the DRP orders could be appealed against by the revenue. We are now told that the revenue authorities will not appeal against a DRP's order, and this again is applicable from June 1, 2016. In regard to concealment penalties, we are now told that there will be a paradigm shift. 271(1)(c) will be deleted altogether, and 270(A), section 270(A) will be introduced. This will be applicable from financial year 16-17 and onwards. And we are told that instead of the current paradigm shift in the corporate tax regime, where we are moving away from incentives, exemptions, reductions, particularly profit-linked ones, and moving on to a more competitive, globally comparable tax rate. In regard to most R&D benefits, we are told that the weighted deduction will become only 100% again effective from March 2020. But from 200% or 175% as it was, it would stand reduced to 150% for expenditures incurred after April 1, 2017. So there's a phased, now till 31st March 2017, continue to get 200%. On or after April 1st, 2017, we'll get 150%. And on or after April 1, 2020, will get 100% tax deduction. This is apart from the patent regime that we saw of a short while ago. In regard to deduction on capital expenditure in respect of cold chains, warehousing, etc., the weighted deduction has been reduced from 150 to 100% again on or after for expenditures incurred on or after April 1, 2017. So there's enough time, so to say, for businesses to adjust. In regard to skill development, notified skill development projects, deduction for expenditure again stands reduced from 150 to 100% from April 1, 2020 onwards. And in regard to deductions for infrastructure facilities, development of SEZs, etc., on or after April 1, 2017, no profit link deductions will be available. Moving on further, a new scheme for dispute resolution is proposed to be introduced. What we are told is that this scheme will cover all matters pending before the Commissioner Appeals as on today, 29th February 2016, against any assessment or even a penalty. In case of pending appeal orders or appeal matters before the Commissioner Appeals, 25% of the minimum penalty is leviable along with the tax and interest. Consequent to such declaration, we are told that the appeal will be deemed to be withdrawn, and the declarant is given, has to waive right to any further recourse whatsoever, so that the dispute stands settled once and for all. Additionally, we are told that, once again, in regard to buyback tax 115QA, what we are now told is that it will apply for all unlisted companies, even if the buyback is done not under Section 77A of the Companies Act, but it is a buyback done under, say, a 391 to 394 scheme, under the Companies Act.
Areas which are, you could call, surprises. One is, of course, the so-called Google tax. Did we expect this? And second is this patents box regime. What do you think about it as a large Indian group? Is it something which now time has come for Indian groups to consider actually developing IPR and exploit it at a fairly reduced 10% rate, which this section seems to suggest?
To what extent the statistics are on utilization of that section? But it was connected with employment in a manufacturing sector. In a way, it's possibly telling that that is not the area where the growth in this country is happening. The services sector was left out, and that is what one had been representing to government. And one thought that was a fair ask while all the deductions and exemptions are proposed to be taken away, and rightly so, and rates being brought down to a 25% roadmap of lower rates. The one section which one thought needed to remain and needed to be expanded upon is this particular section, 18JJA or so. I think that's the section. We've never used it and therefore don't remember the section number. But what is being proposed is that if your employees, if you take on new employees with a salary up to 25,000 rupees and some calculation or some methods of computing number of new employees has also been simplified, you will be effectively given a weighted deduction for a five-year period, I think, for a three-year period. So 30% of your salary bill is given to you as an additional deduction for a three-year period. I think this is a commendable giveaway which the government has given, in a way, in a manner of speaking, because your private sector and government's interests are aligned, that is to create employment within this country. On the one hand, we talk of skill development. On the other hand, you have to create the jobs finally. And that is the incentive given to the corporate sector to create these jobs. It's not the large IT companies which I think which will run away with the benefit of this deduction, because their 25,000 rupees salary level presumably will be much lower than the rates at the levels at which they employ fresh talent. I think here the benefit will go to the retail sector, the BPO sector. These are the areas where large employment is going to take place and is taking place today. And these are the areas which I think will stand to gain. The other section which I think enthused one very much so is it's relatively very minor. 6% interest which you get today from on a refund which you are entitled to is increased to 9%. One could quibble over the rates, whether the 9% should have been 12%, whether 12% should have 9% should have been tax-free. But that's not what is really the part which enthuses one. You had various sections under the Act which kind of put an onus on the department to carry out appeal effects, rectifications within a certain time, appeal orders to be passed within a time. But these were sections without any teeth because there was no monitoring of whether to what extent this is being implemented. For the first time, one is reading in the finance minister's speech that this additional 3% tax will actually be, the way I read it, is recovered from that for the loss to the revenue of the additional 3%. I think it's not the amount, it's the message out here. I think that is what we are looking for. Gone are the days of asking for what deduction year or an exemption there. I think we've come to accept that you have reasonable rates of taxes, whether it is 30 or whether it is 25. All that you're concerned with is proper administration. And this is possibly the most salutary feature of this entire finance bill. This has to be a two-way traffic. While one is expected to file one return correctly on time, comply with notices for hearings, this is the least what one should be expecting, the manner in which the assessments are carried out.
Tax reforms, let's say, long pending tax reforms. The other is the penalty design, right, or the provisions, which have not been touched basically almost like, you know, for decades. At least now again there is an attempt for the first time being made to make them more user friendly, you would say?
I think so. I think again very commendable. 1/3 of the tax rate I think is what is being proposed as opposed to the 100 to the 300%,
right,
which by and large one used to see the penalty orders at 100%. And one is differentiating between a tax evasion and a tax interpretation, I would possibly try to put it.
Well, one hope the design comes out accordingly. But, you know, just one point I noted here, maybe Pranav, you can pay the tax and you pay the interest because that's the amount you have used the money, arguably. And then penalty is anyway penal in nature. So if you have to forcibly pay, see, once I am in dispute or once I am in appeal, I would assume that I reasonably believe that there's a fair chance of, you know, success. And then to pay 25% of the penalty amount, I'm not sure.
If I may come in here, the option is of the assessee.
That's true.
Of the appellant.
But will it be attractive option?
If he realizes his case is a bad case.
Right.
If it's bordering, if he feels sure that it is significantly bordering on the penalty being upheld.
Sure.
He will look at this quick fix solution.
Right.
Because he closes litigation. Because assuming he even succeeds at the CIT level.
Right.
Or if he loses in any case, the matter goes to the tribunal.
Sure.
In such a scenario, getting away at 25%
in
a bad case to start off with, I think was a great thing for him. In fact, one may then question why is he being given such an easy exit.
and increasingly, managements want to get rid of litigation, focus on business, and free up the bandwidth.
And considering the period of litigation, Sudhir, people will start doing a cost-benefit analysis.
Absolutely.
And may decide to just pay 25% and move on. And then in indirect tax, there are already provisions with this kind of a penalty, you know.
Right. 25%?
Yeah. Yeah. Where you have a Suomoto
penalty
and then you don't have a notice, you know. So fundamentally, the volume is so high.
Yes.
So they will try and they must still have many people opting for it. You know?
And Farooq, your view, and then we'll come back to the patent and Google part later. But since we are on this very substantive issue of, you know, tax cash flows, if you like, what's your view on coming to linking it up to indirect tax? We saw a 7.5%, and then you have a stay of the demand notice, a mandatory, and now we have 15% in the direct tax laws for the first time, probably. And a mandatory stay, as I understand it. So it's not, again, discretionary. It is not that there is a good behavior, this, that, and the other subjectivity. And if this indeed is the case, that will be the first time in the direct tax laws that there is at least, and you know, this whole thing about bank accounts being freezed, that tax terrorism actually never ceased in those cases. Will this at last put an end to this kind of aggressive, you know, tax enforcement?
A bit of a mixed bag again, because in a normal situation, you're very happy because now you don't have to go seeking up. But, you know, you also have cases where there are apparent errors in your order.
Right.
Your demand is created by apparent errors. Demands could be created by not following a decision in your own case.
Right.
Let's take a situation. I have a decision in my own case.
Right.
In a preceding year.
Right.
Right. I would have thought I get a stay for the asking. In this case, now possibly I'll be told, no, pay
15%. That's a very good point.
You know, high pitch assessment.
So it cuts both ways.
So it cuts both ways, you know.
And I think indirect tax already has some.
No, we have a similar mandatory provision which was brought in years, two couple of years back. But the point is, like Farooq rightly said, it cuts both ways. Sure. In some scenarios where the whole issue itself is frivolous, sure, it could be a scenario where we end up paying that 7.5 or 15% like
you all. What if it's an absolute genuine error?
Genuine error. Yeah.
In the service tax concept, I understand. I've asked for a rectification. Nobody carried it out. I want to go and appeal. And I have no option but to make that payment.
Right. Patent box, which is there, you know, UK introduced it, Netherlands introduced it. Just as on onshore fund activity in India, activities in international financial center. Now you have India introducing a patent box regime. You think that would be a fillip for Indian corporates to now look at development of IPR in India itself?
Very welcome step. But right, I don't think tax will drive the creation of the patent. I mean, that's something which that company needs to take on as a part of its own DNA.
Right.
And once it does that and once it earns income from abroad from those patents, yes, definitely very welcome.
Right.
I don't think tax should ever be looked at as a means of or a method to propagate a particular business.
No, I agree. No, if only it can. Will tax, Farooq, did you expect an e-commerce tax so quickly in India?
Not really, but I think it's just a sign of...
It's there everywhere, so yeah, it's coming everywhere.
I mean, look at it from an indirect tax perspective. Every state, at least I know of 5 states in the last 6 months, who have brought in discriminatory entry tax, kind of a purchase tax, on e-commerce shipments. So fundamentally, you buy from a state outside India. As a citizen of India, I have the freedom to buy a CST transaction and suffer only 2% CST, whatever that CST rate is.
Right.
Now the local states are saying, I will charge an additional 6% or any such percentage on e-commerce transactions separately.
Right.
So this issue on treating e-commerce, everybody wanting a pie of the e-commerce transaction has become...
Everybody is in a hurry to jump without realizing
that you're really distorting the whole system.
To indirect tax, Pranav, just to be clear, retrospective window which is now available rather on retrospective amendments, it is not only restricted to indirect
tax. Yes, that's right.
That's a very important...
Absolutely correct.
And he alluded to the 2012 budget. So are we saying that all retrospective amendments brought in the 2012 budget will be subject to this amnesty?
Yeah, I think so. So in simultaneously, there were the royalty definition,
exactly,
the Section 9(1) amendments that came about, which
right,
was the main part of the retrospective.
Which is again a very, very powerful move to try and undo some of that damage. But of course, what taxpayers will on the other end say, they still have to suffer tax on a retrospective law. At least interest and penalties are waived. So again, perhaps a mixed bag, Farooq, you think?
I think there was a lot of ask from the international community.
Right.
Because possibly they knew that the retrospective tax is not going to go away.
Right. Parliament has the right.
If you really look at it, the finance minister had the opportunity to withdraw the retrospective tax.
Absolutely.
Right. We understand the quantums involved, the issues involved, that to an extent there is a particular viewpoint which the department also has, which one should respect out here. The government is saying that I'll get my 30%, which it was not collecting. The amounts are very huge.
Right.
And I will waive the interest and the penalty. Now, the interest itself could be much more than the principal
amount.
And 10 years later, possibly those amounts look rational today, what would look totally absurd at that point of time, even the principal amount. And the whole idea is, I want to do business, I want to remain in this country, let's get on and spend one's time on productive work and not fighting litigation. With the penalty related one, there you are paying 25% of the amount. Here you're saying, here you're paying pay the whole tax.
But you are one getting interest and penalty waived. Great, okay, thanks Pranav.
Thank you so much.
Indirect tax, Hari, now?
So in indirect tax, if you recall, the expectations was that this budget may probably do some structural changes across service tax and excise, which could be a precursor to GST. Well, the finance minister did make a statement about the importance of the passage of the amendment bill for GST, but it continues to remain uncertain. But many of those changes did not happen, you know, whether it was threshold, whether it was increase in service tax rates. Yes, some degree of expansion of base in service tax, some degree of excise tweaks have happened, but by and large, none of those big structural changes happened at all. So the indirect tax proposals were basically on 3 pillars. First and foremost, which seems to be the theme in the budget, is to incentivize Make in India. The second theme was try and reduce litigation, and you're seeing another scheme, which is the dispute resolution scheme. And the third was try and rationalize and simplify the tax regime to the extent possible. So these were the 3 pillars that you saw in the indirect tax proposals, which I will cover in the coming slides. So in customs, across sectors, primarily IT, cap goods, defense production, textiles, minerals, chemicals and petrochemicals, you saw a host of changes right from change in customs duty, basic customs duty rate from 7.5 to 10 to unfinished products, exemptions, more and more exemptions on inputs for incentivizing manufacturing. To give you an example, of two sectors, in case of the IT sector, they really want to incentivize manufacture and try and incentivize manufacture in a manner which is not a mere screwdriver technology, but try and even create certain of the critical components. They have tried and to bring in the special additional duty on imports so as to disincentivize. In case of computers, the SAD has been brought in as 4%. In case of populated boards of telecom and tablets, it's been brought in as 2%. Besides, in telecom, they've also tried and removed adapters, battery chargers, speakers, and things of that nature, which were forming a part for our entire package of a mobile industry outside the concessional duty regime, and have brought them into a higher duty regime so as to try and bring in manufacturing in India by again providing exemptions to parts that create the manufacture of those items at all. So the fundamental theme has been to try and incentivize and try and bring more manufacturing activity into India with a fair degree of value addition. In line with what they have done as far as Make in India is concerned, many of these manufacturers go and use a rule called the Customs Import of Goods at Concessional Duty rules. Now, these rules in the past needed time-to-time approvals, which was a pain from an ease of doing business for many of the manufacturers. So what they have done, which is, I would say, salutary, is they have made it into a self-declaration so that you really keep doing your business and you keep declaring self to the jurisdictional excise commissionate. So that's another good welcome move. In customs, they have come up with a new concept which is prevalent in the international community but not been in India. That is to provide deferred payment of customs duty for identified class of importers. In fact, the budget speech spoke about importers with a proven track record. The only question is, who are those importers with proven track record? Are they for people who are registered in the accredited program or the ACP program? Would they be for people who are part of the AEO program, authorized economic operators in amount? But at least there has been a simplification as far as baggage rules are concerned. Moving on to excise. Excise saw the same theme that I spoke about in customs. Fundamentally, the entire tweak in excise on finished goods and parts has been to incentivize local manufacture with some degree of value addition. Again, in excise, the rule that is used by most manufacturers has been made a self-declaratory scheme rather than an approval scheme. Ease of doing business is again a welcome step. Also, excise duty regime has been brought on in the case of ready-made garments, which has an RSP of more than 1,000 rupees. It indicates a suggestion that in GST, this would be something which will come into the GST regime, and this could be considered as more like a precursor to the GST regime. Here it has been two options, one without credit and one with credit. Service tax, many of us expected service tax rates to go up, and it still continues to be a surprise to me as to where are those numbers adding up, because the service tax rate has not been increased. The expectation was this might go to 16. All that he has done is brought about a Krishi Kalyan cess of 0.5%. which has been introduced on all taxable services with effect from June 1st, 2016. But thankfully in this case, this is available as a credit. This can be used as a credit, unlike the Swachh Bharat cess, which continues to be non-creditable. To that extent, this won't have a cascading effect that the SBC had. Service tax base has also been expanded, and two important items have been brought into the service tax levy. One is ocean freight for import consignments with effect from June 1st, 2016. This is interesting. Instead of zero rating, they've brought in this ocean freight. So I really don't know what could be the real impact. This has to be studied in detail to find out what would be the impact on Indian shipping companies. This was an ask by some of the people, but I don't know the way the change has happened as to what could be the real impact. The second aspect has been that assignment of right to use radio frequency spectrum has been made a declared service exigible to service tax. Yes, good that it has been made exigible to service tax. But having made it a declared service, it still doesn't stop the challenge of state authorities trying to levy VAT on that. The second fact is that though the tax is to be taken at the time of an assignment of such spectrum, the credit will be available pro rata over the period of assignment, which means this is a deferred credit and will be available year on year. I don't know how much the industry would welcome this. Services by mutual fund, agent, distributor taxable under the forward charge from April 1st, 2016. All services rendered, received from government taxable now under the reverse charge. In case of IT software of the nature of package software, which goes under a retail sale price concept, you will now have to have a prescribed methodology where you will declare that you are a payer of service tax with the registration, and there is a format of declaration. So they've made it a little bit more robust as far as levying either service tax or customs duty. In case of customized software, where there was no retail sale price required, excise duty now will apply only on the value of carrier media, and the rest, which is the license fee primarily, will be subject to service tax. Haulage services provided by Indian Railways to CTOs has now been clarified to mean transport of goods by rail. This is a very important salutary clarification, because there has been a huge litigation around this, because the Service Tax Authority are trying to treat them as business support services. So this is a huge relief as far as this area of litigation is concerned. SenVAT credit, we all knew there would be changes in SenVAT credit, and the SenVAT credit changes have happened pretty significant way. So first and foremost, they have tried to rationalize the SenVAT credit so as to provide more liberalized credit. So items available for credit have now been expanded to also cover office equipment. Capital goods of a specified threshold up to 10,000 each item have now been reclassified as inputs subject to reversals. This would benefit the telecom industry, especially with respect to SIM cards. Expansions of persons eligible to claim credit now also includes a job worker classified or defined as outsourced manufacturing unit. Updation and provisions allowing credits to persons having both taxable and exempt supplies. So 6-3 rule, which deals with both reversal for exempt and taxable supplies, has had an ambiguity as far as the interpretation is concerned, about sanitizing the credit which are directly in relation to exempt items. This has been clarified, and the clarification, in my view, will actually benefit the SSE. So again, a salutary clarification from a SenVAT credit perspective. Also, the ambiguity and time limit in filing refunds by an exporter of service has now been resolved, and it has been very specifically mentioned as 1 year from the date of receipt of consideration, or in case of advances, 1 year from the date of invoice. Again, there was an ambiguity as to what would be the prevailing date for which this 1 year applies. Manufacturers with multiple manufacturing units can now maintain a common warehouse for distribution of credits on inputs. So the supply chain over the years in the manufacturing industry has gone through a change. So you might have a common warehouse where you might import goods, locally procured goods, and store it in a warehouse, and then move it to your various manufacturing locations for just-in-time kind of a supply chain concept. And now, from going forward, this will also be part of the credit distribution change, and you can actually issue an invoice from one of those warehouses for passing on the credit to your manufacturing units. Annual return now to be filed by 30th November by all SSCs in case of SenVAT. Also, provisions with regard to utilization of credit based on FIFO has now been deleted. This was creating an interest liability issue and a risk on interest liability issue from a point of view of it coming into the utilization pool. To that extent, this clarification and this deletion helps the industry. Another cornerstone of this budget proposals and indirect tax has been the whole idea of reducing litigation. So like in the case of income tax, indirect tax also has a scheme called the Dispute Resolution Scheme, effective 1st June 2016. This is applicable to all customs, excise and service tax laws. Disputes pending before Commissioner Appeals, first stage of appellate authority, for cases of tax duty up to 50 lakh limit, because the power at the Commissioner Appeals level for adjudications is a level of 50 lakhs. So all cases of this nature available under the dispute resolution scheme. In fact, the explanatory note of the TRU memorandum says that there are roughly 3 lakh cases of this nature at the Commissioner Appeal level. 11 new benches of SESTAT are also to be established. The only concern here is that, it's a great idea of establishing new benches, but the question is the quorum. When do you create quorums and how do you operationalize some of these benches? Now, the limit for launching prosecution has been raised from 1 crore to 2 crores for service tax evasion. Second is the power to arrest is restricted only where tax is collected but not deposited and exceeds a number of 2 crores. In recent months, we have seen a lot of such harassments of arrest. So basically, they're trying to restrict cases where such an arrest provision can be invoked. prosecution proceedings to be withdrawn for excise duty for all such cases which are pending for more than 15 years and which have a value of 5 lakhs. So fundamentally what the government is trying to do is that whether the dispute resolution scheme, whether this, they're trying to remove the volume of cases that are stuck at various levels so as to reduce litigation and concentrate on those larger cases. The period of limitation for issuing show cause notices in cases not involving fraud, suppression of facts, etc. has been extended. In case of customs and excise, it has moved from 12 to 24 months. In case of service tax, the period has been increased from 18 to 30 months. One more issue that's come up is that in case of both excise, customs and service tax, the interest rates for non-payment of taxes and duty has been brought to 15%. And in case of service tax, where tax is collected and not deposited, from 30, it has come down to 24%.
Okay, so the third, if I were to ask you, you know, this whole expectation, which we alluded to in the opening remarks, that because GST is obviously getting deferred, will we see some kind of, two things. One is some kind of alignment on input credits, which today, obviously, you have excise, you have service tax law, etc. That's on one part. And this economic survey, what it talked about, and on that one it was very forceful. It was used that we strongly suggest to the government that you should do something about the countervailing duties to protect Indian manufacturers. Would you like to comment on both these trends? How do you see it being addressed in this budget?
So I'll take the countervailing duties first. In countervailing duties, Sudhir, actually, if you look at the tweaks that have happened in excise and customs,
right,
they primarily have alluded to what the economic survey has done.
Okay.
So fundamentally what they have done, they have somewhere increased basic customs duties, they have brought in exemptions for parts and components and accessories for manufacturing those finished goods.
Okay.
They have tried to bring in special additional duties in some cases to try and make imports as a disincentive for with increased cost of duty.
Okay.
So they've tried and they've not done it entirely, but in identified sectors where there has been a requirement and where there has been a Make in India thrust, those are the areas that they have done.
Right.
Okay. As far as GST, in my view, I take the signal as probably they're still pretty serious about GST, because they could have easily attempted to go for a central GST, which was the conversation that was going on leading to the budget. The fact that they have not done it, I don't know whether they're pretty serious about GST or basically altogether.
But it found a customary mention in his speech.
He did.
Sure.
He did. But nothing beyond that.
Along with insolvency law.
Absolutely. Okay. Along with bankruptcy and insolvency law.
Farooq, your take on some of these indirect tax provisions, anything which in particular you would like to dwell upon?
I think the big one was more or less there was an expectation of the service tax going up.
Right.
Which increase has not happened, and that's been a possibly that was a point of time when the market started going up or reversed the downward trend. But otherwise, it's broadly in the right direction. I don't think there are areas I hadn't realized this reduction in the interest rate, which was kind of massive, absolutely.
Right. So on the dispute resolution, Hari, you said for commissioner appeals and indirect taxes, anyway, the limits, the powers are quite
only
restricted.
Up to 50 lakhs.
So, largely speaking, I mean, for India Inc. or corporates, this will be of not much relevance, right?
If the way they have spoken about is the first appellate authority and commissioner appeals, and the powers there is only up to 50 lakhs, then
right,
it appears that the whole focus has been on the large volume of cases.
Somewhere the memorandum
alludes to 3
it
lakh
is good, it
cases.
Is good, but I'm just saying for reasonably large size corporates, if there are pending disputes, etc., that really won't get covered here.
Large number of disputes
by definition.
May not.
Because if they are at SysTat, now as you said, they're trying to address through 11 new benches. What's the science behind 11?
I'm surprised. Probably they're looking at locations where the SESTATs are now in the larger cities. So they're trying to bring it to more periphery cities.
Right.
And also, by increasing the 11 SESTAT benches and also the mandatory deposit that we spoke about.
Right.
Fundamentally, what they're trying to do is that try and spend the time of the SESTAT more on merit hearings rather than stay hearings.
Which is welcome.
So which kind of pushes through the number of cases that needs to be decided.
Right. And while it was expected, at least I didn't catch any tinkering with or increasing the threshold limit for registration for excise or service tax. As
nothing.
You said, it shows
I was quite
sitting
surprised.
Pretty saying GST
sitting
will
pretty.
Come and address
nothing.
whatever we need
so
to address.
So, two things. I can only read it as two things. If they had done that, then I thought probably
there is less
they will wait for GST. There is going to be time before they do GST.
Or accepting one proposal of Mr. Rahul Gandhi gives confidence that GST will go through. Farooq, on one last point on this tax on dividends, and we have received some queries from listeners as well. What happens to the taxation on mutual funds? And at least as it appears, the objective seems to be that this additional 10% tax applies to shareholders receiving dividends from companies, not therefore to investors in mutual fund units. And we can, we need to read through and confirm this. But I think the answer to that is reasonably clear, that this is, as I was alluding to, is more like, the well-off having to pay tax. And normally it is assumed that if you are earning dividends, mind you, of more than 10 lakhs, so imagine with a yield of dividends being 2 to 3% on the stock exchange today, that person would be a very, very large individual shareholder. It's only restricted to that category of shareholders.
I would agree, because clause 50, section, proposed section 115, BBDA, all
right,
in capitals,
right,
refers to the income received by an individual HUF firm resident in India, includes any income exceeding 10 lakhs by way of dividends declared,
yes,
by a domestic company.
Right.
Right. So the mutual fund is not covered.
Absolutely.
Out.
And this 10 lakhs is dividends. So I think that is important. It's not that somebody who is in the 10 lakh income bracket, because somewhere that also got a little, hazy at the time of the speech.
It could be an old widow who is only earning dividend income.
Sure,
let's
assume
she has her other income is a lakh or 2 lakhs.
Sure.
She would be liable to this.
She would be liable.
She would be liable. But I don't think one can quibble with it.
10 lakhs dividend is a pretty large threshold by itself per se.
But no deduction, no expenses will be allowed against it. It's not that 14A disappears because of the fact that I'm off paying 10% tax.
Yeah, that's...
And mind you, the company has paid 20% tax.
Right.
You are now paying 10%. So therefore, you're bringing it to a level of the marginal rate of tax.
And also the, one final word on the DDT scheme itself, there was also the expectation that we will move to a taxation on shareholders rather than continue a dividend distribution tax, which anyway, in a way, increases the effective corporate tax rate. Do you think that is something which can be thought about, or we are just reconciled to a DDT?
I think we've reconciled to it. The rates are very high. Yes, we do accept the fact, but we've kind of reconciled to this. And,
right.
I think the important thing is the simplicity, the ease, the lack of litigation.
Right. That is a very powerful...
That is the most powerful aspect of DDT,
right,
or STT,
right,
or when we had FBT, even the FBT.
Right.
There is no litigation out here.
Right.
There's no problem on collecting the money. There's no advance tax. The simplicity is the beauty of these schemes.
Absolutely. Closing comment I would like to make is that, in a manner of speaking, the FM has continued some of these, simpler design, as Farooq said, design tax policies, whether it's securities transaction tax, whether it is the dividend distribution tax, and in fact, as I said, enhancing the super rich surcharge. So I would just end by, I was just reading one of the sort of feedback which came from Mr. Omar Abdullah, and he said that, look, with this budget, I can't find anything which the opposition can really oppose, because the finance minister has cleverly steered clear of any charge that he is favoring the suited and booted, and there is so much for everyone who is disenfranchised in our economy that frankly they have taken away whatever opposition we can have. And maybe that was what was intended. As I mentioned earlier, from a qualitative aspect, a lot of coverage has been given in this budget, much more than what we thought one can cover in such a short period of time in a budget exercise.